Hello, hello. Welcome to House Einstein podcast number 27 with a title yet to be named. Maybe we'll come up with a good one by the end. I am Osman with House Einstein, and I've been doing real estate a long time, mostly in Boulder, but also previously on Nantucket. And with me is Hamish Crabb.
Hello, hello. I'm Hamish Crabb. I've been here for just under 2 years and help keep the brokerage running smoothly from marketing tasks all the way to contract writing and showings. So good to be here.
Jack of all trades and partner in crime. And we're very glad to have you.
Thank you.
Our mission at House Einstein is to help you make a smart real estate decision. And we do that with market analytics and advice, due diligence support, negotiation advice and technique. I mean, we've been doing this a long time, and we take fiduciary responsibility quite seriously. If you're interested in learning more about the brokerage, you'll find us at houseeinstein.com. There's a number of agents on the team, and we really are a team. We work incredibly well together, and I'm grateful for all of our clients and grateful for you, dear listeners. Before I go too far, though, I need to do the standard disclaimer, which is this podcast is entertainment. If you are a client, just reach out to us, preferably with a phone call or a text message or an email. Reach out to your agent that represents you. But otherwise, consider this podcast entertainment, and that keeps the attorneys happy. It is not legal advice, spiritual advice. It might be moral or ethical advice from time to time, but certainly not investment advice.
Only entertainment.
It's entertainment. Good point. Yeah. Thank you,
Hamish. And we serve Colorado in the Front Range.
That's
and in the mountains a little bit too, yeah.
That's right. Thanks, Hamish. Yeah. In the mountains. And in the mountains, mostly we're talking Breckenridge, Frisco, Winter Park.
Grand County.
Yeah. And of course, all the little foothill towns that are part of Boulder County, Ward, Nederland, Jamestown.
Quite the footprint. Yep. I was just updating our recent sales on our website, and I saw the Ian sale from up in Fort Collins, and I was like, yeah, we really do kind of, House Einstein, small but mighty, you know?
That's true. We did just have a closing in Fort Collins. I've gone as far south as Colorado Springs for past clients and as far north as Fort Collins personally, and we will do that if you are a past or current client. If you're not a past or current client, I got to turn off my phone. Oops, we made a mistake. So topics this week, we're going to talk about a quick market update. We're going to cover sales of the week. There are a couple of them that I think are worth noting and likely will be part of our newsletter before the end of December. We're going to talk a little bit about title companies and the importance of bedside manner when you're dealing with title companies, the importance of responsiveness. And then we'll wrap it up with a discussion of upcoming events here in Boulder.
Sounds like a plan. Well, starting out, if you follow Osman or House Einstein on social media, you've seen this statistic already. But Osman, you want to walk us through?
The statistic is about the higher end of the market. And I arbitrarily chose 3 million as a price point, 3 million and north, 3 million and up, to define what is more or less the luxury segment of the market. And when I first started in Boulder in 2005, in Boulder real estate, it was more like 1 to 1.5 range would have been considered luxury and up. And I think I used 1 in one of my first analyses. And these days, 3 million is what a lot of people would consider a livable home within the city of Boulder, not within the entirety of Boulder County. So I use that as a number, as a baseline to just get a sense of what's happening in the market, because I keep hearing from agents, just like you likely do, your friend that's an agent, talk about their own personal business. And some people are saying, oh, the market's so horrible. And others are saying, no, the upper end of the market's raging hot. It's the entry level that's horrible. And then we're hearing, you know, anecdotal information we hear all the time, and it's not particularly useful because it's not targeted to price range, location, property type, and it's just too generic to be actionable for people that are actually in the market. So I decided to go ahead and take a look at 3 million plus in the city of Boulder only, and I was a little surprised. The 3 million and plus segment of the market last month single-family houses only, held up just fine in terms of sales volume year over year, looking at November data. I'm sorry, looking at year-to-date through the end of November data, not just November.
Okay.
One month is not enough for a small market like the city of Boulder. You end up with a sample size problem. But 11 months is more than enough. And I was, I don't know, should I call it pleasantly surprised? I don't think it matters. I personally don't have a dog in the fight. I want our clients to be successful no matter what the market conditions happen to be. But I was surprised that the market was as robust in terms of sales volume in this market segment. There's virtually no change. I think it was like 77 and 79 sales, which is immaterial. Two is immaterial, especially given that there are probably going to be a few more that are going to be backfilled into the data set this week because a lot of agents aren't going to update. There's probably some closings happening today and tomorrow, or happened yesterday, that count toward November. So this year is actually stronger than last year by a few houses for $3 million and up. And I did not publish the next stat. We just did it, actually, Hamish and I, together before the call. And I wanted to see, well, what's happening with prices? Now, this is kind of a tricky stat because you've already segmented the market at $3 million plus. And now you're just going to say, well, okay, within that $3 million to infinity segment of the market for single family houses, what was the actual median dollar per square foot change? And I actually did this for the same three statistics, the under how many homes sold for less than list, how many homes sold for list price, and how many homes sold for more than list. But really, I don't think that's a meaningful slice and dice. I think what actually is meaningful is the total. And I was surprised to see that the median dollar per square for this segment of the market increased 5.8% year over year. So prices are up year over year. Prices are not down for this segment of the market. For the same dollars that you could have invested in luxury real estate in Boulder, you clearly are getting smaller houses, or prices have gone up for the same size house. Either way, numerator or denominator, 5.8% is what the increase has been year to date.
Yeah. I mean, just recently we had some clients go on a kind of a tour of Boulder County, different neighborhoods, different areas. And I think they found that even for the kind of the finishes and the quality that they were looking for, it's a much higher price range than elsewhere in the country.
That's right.
Yeah. Boulder's in other premium. Words, it's quite the premium.
Yeah. In other words, they're just deeply disappointed by what they can buy in the price range that they would comfortably like to buy in, because in their town, they're moving from that price range is at the very top end of the market. And here, that price range isn't even in the luxury segment. It's below the luxury segment. So you get a lot of dilapidated houses, a lot of homes that have had no updating, and that can be really frustrating. And so what we usually do, which is we start driving from Boulder and start moving further and further from Boulder till suddenly the house matches their expectation. And that's sort of where we are. They've got a few months yet to shop. They're getting to know the market. And we were their tour guide for that and have been. But it's not an uncommon experience. So now we're looking at Louisville. We're maybe looking at Lafayette. We're maybe looking at Prospect Longmont, Southwest Longmont. Exactly.
Less so Lafayette.
Less so Lafayette, because that does not feel quite as put together for this end of the segment. So, but let me wrap up the quick data on 3 million plus. So I pulled up the Instagram post to make sure I got this right. So 76 and 78 were the numbers. 76 total houses in 2022, 78 sales in 2023 year to date through the end of November. And that 78 this year is likely going to go up because it was a few days left in the month of November. And this year, the number of homes that sold for below list were 53, and the number of homes that sold last year were 40. So a pretty significant increase, 13 more houses sold this year than last year under list price. And then in 2022, 23 houses sold for asking, and in 2023, only 18 sold for asking. And then and this is the part I really wanted to look at. This is what drove the entire analysis, or my curiosity was sparked, was how many people are paying more than list? right now? Like, is that a large segment of the market? And in 2022, only 13 home buyers paid more than list. So that's 13 out of a total of 76. And so that's roughly 17% of buyers paid more than list. And this year it was seven. Seven out of 78 is, you know, roughly 10%. It's actually less than that. Seven over 78 is 8.9%. Well, call it 9% if you round up. So 9% versus 17%. So, you know, a little bit of a halving of that frenzy. Mm-hmm. And what sparked that is a listing I'm not going to talk about, but because of, for a variety of reasons, I don't want to target any particular agent involved. But I was just stunned that this person went over list, and I looked at who the buy side agent was, and it added up why this person went more than list. So the take home, without disclosing any further details, if you're thinking about buying a home at any price, you should always look at the comps, and you should always think twice about whether you should be paying a premium above list, because typically list price represents an aggressive sale price. It's usually a sale price that is a little higher than market, although some agents are known to price low. It doesn't at this for this particular house, it was not priced low, and the dollar per square is so far off the chart, it's kind of mind-blowing. You know, this is where it's important to choose your agent carefully.
I think I saw this house this morning when I was running the weekly stats, and yeah, I don't know what else to say to try and identify it. Let's not.
Yeah. It's too small of a market. We do business with this person. We don't want to have be on her. I guess I can say the S word. We don't want to be on her dit list. Oh, and this is a small town. When you could bleep out the S word, Hamish, yeah. If you feel like that's going to be a problem.
Going to write down the time code. We're demonetized.
We don't want to be on that list. And we've done business with her before. We'll do business with her again. And we don't take things personally. And we try to follow the Buffett rule, which is criticized by category. And the category of agents like this have very big egos. They broadcast a expertise that they think is far and beyond what anybody else has. They're very derogatory toward all other agents. And
sharks.
And they're very good at convincing people of how well they know the luxury segment, the modern segment, the historic home segment, whatever it happens to be. But when you actually ask them to show you the data, that's when things start to fall apart, particularly around so dollar per square foot, right, is a statistic. It's not the most important one. You should look at all data points together as a whole, right? A very large house usually has a lower dollar per square, given all of the things the same, than a very small house, right? That's one example of how dollar per square varies. Location mm-hmm. also has a tremendous impact on dollar per square, but you shouldn't just ignore it. And when you're that far off the chart, you better stop and pause and say, wait, hold on. Are we crazy to spend this much money on a dollar per square foot basis? That was my conclusion when I saw that sale. It's like, wow, that was quite an interesting sale. Okay, let's not go any further into that. But the rest of the data analysis for November. Across the entire market of single-family houses – nope, sorry, strike that. Across the entire market for both single-family and attached properties, so single-family houses, traditional houses, townhomes and condos – but we're not talking about multifamily, like apartment buildings sold as one. We're talking about you can buy this as an individual unit. There were 42.4% more active listings in Boulder this week, week 48 of the year, than there were last year. And in Denver, it was 20.8%. So roughly 42% more active listings in Boulder, roughly 21% more active listings in Denver. That's a lot more selection than buyers have had in many years. And that's why I keep telling people that you've got maybe another week left of aggressive home shopping before we're into January's market. And people take homes off the market over the holidays. They're done for the year. Sellers are mm-hmm. mentally, psychologically checked out. They're thinking about next year, and hopes always springs eternal in the spring. And that's likely what happens is prices start to climb again. And that is statistically proven across the country that prices rise in the spring. The same equivalent house in the fall you can get for a much lower price. And given that some people like Paul Ackman are now publicly predicting rates to decline in the first quarter. I'm
They've kind
sort of
bounced.
On board with that.
Yeah. Did you have of, you been I'm, watching a little bit?
What have they been doing?
We had that big drop where everybody kind of, you know, it's like this emotional roller coaster that is exactly in line with the rates. But yeah, they dropped, I think, from around eight, maybe eight and some change, down to 7.3 territory. And then last week, I think it was, I saw them go back up to 7.5, at least for my lender.
I think we'll be in the sixes in the first quarter. By the end of this first quarter, I think we'll be in the sixes. That's my prediction. You can tell me how wrong I am by the end of March, Hamish.
Yeah. Oh, a really quick plug here. If you haven't seen our social medias and all the stats, you should check out Osman Parvez on Instagram. Just that word, you know, one word, no spaces, or House Einstein, and you can find us there. And if you come from the podcast, comment a little microphone. I want to see, you know, how that works.
That would be cool. That would be very cool. I've noticed that the number of listeners are increasing on the podcast. So we're getting some traction. And if you heard this, that would be fun to see. And thanks for listening again, by the way, or checking out our socials. My personal socials, by the way, are, I don't know, two-thirds business, one-third personal. You know, I want people to know I live and work in this market. And I also have a life. And so when we're doing something fun or connecting with family, and my family's cool with it, or friends are cool with it, I'll post what's happening. And we'll get to some upcoming events at the end of this podcast, too, if you're looking to stalk me.
Absolutely. Okay, I think I've derailed it enough. On the quick rate side of things, I know the Zestimates aren't, the Zillow estimates aren't gospel, so to speak. But I've been kind of watching mine since I purchased the house, and as rates, it's, you know, almost like a inverse reaction. So as rates climbed, I've just been watching my value tank, and I'm up this month magically. Thank you, Zillow lords.
I always tell people, don't do it. It doesn't matter. You live in the house.
It's complete. Yeah, exactly. Right. Ignore Once you purchased, it's pointless. But
it's like the stock market is an indicator of how rich people feel. Mm-hmm. And people that own their own home also look at things like the Zillow number just to feel good or feel bad. And it really doesn't matter unless you're selling the house.
No, 100%. It's just been a fun little relationship to watch, you know. And I'm like, ooh, you know, if I ever was going to, you know, you dream, you have funds. Okay.
Well, someday you will. Someday you will. Probably buy another one, and I hope you never sell. That's my goal.
But I know. I've been thinking about that strategy as well, and I'm like, geez. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
I froze. Are we ready to talk about sales of the week?
We are.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can sort of follow along with these on Zillow. So now that these are public, we can talk about listings that have closed. And that's a real estate rule. That's a National Association of Realtors rule, which I am a member of the cartel. And they don't like being called a cartel, but let's just face it. And as a member of the cartel, you adhere by the rules. It's not La Cosa Nostra, but one of the rules are that we don't talk about active listings, but we will talk about closed listings publicly. And this podcast is very public. If you're interested in a discussion of active listings, you can check out our newsletter. It's now once a month. Or if you're a client and you want to talk about active listings, you know, call
Pick
me maybe.
Phone. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll
direct
talk
line.
About active listings.
Yeah.
You've got the direct line. I do answer my phone unless you are new to me, and then it goes right to voicemail. I'll leave a message. And if it's a legit call, I will call you back.
Pretty flawless screening.
All right, so first one.
Okay, yeah.
2116 Pearl Street, Unit B.
Yeah. Is this, I think it's a ways away. This isn't the same one that our governor has a condo in, is it?
We're not supposed to mention where I don't think it's good to mention where he is.
Okay.
But I believe he's a couple blocks away from this.
Yeah.
Both to the blocks to the west and blocks to the south. But I don't really, I like Polis, even though
Let's
I don't always agree with him.
Yeah.
But I don't want to talk about where he lives. That's, you know, not a good thing. There's nut jobs out there, Hamish. So, it's not too far. It's a great spot. Okay. From a location perspective, we always start there. It's a great spot. You are right on Pearl, but not directly facing traffic. You've got lots of options for restaurants and shops and all the stuff that happens. And this property was built in 2019, so it shouldn't have a lot of deferred maintenance. It should be essentially lock and leave. The HOA is not, you know, unreasonable given what you're buying and at what price point. But what I thought was really interesting about this property was it's a loser in terms of what people – so you often hear this from –
positive.
I like the place. There's a lot I like.
No, it was good. You've got a sandwich going.
Let's stay with what we like for another minute before we talk about what a loser it is.
No, we can – we'll just sandwich it, you know.
You know, actually, I think it actually does have traffic exposure from the deck. So it is right on Pearl. And it's nicely designed. It's very artistic. The owner's taste is interesting and I think attractive. There's some weirdness, like the jungle wallpaper in the bathroom. But at the same time, it's a place you would never be embarrassed to bring guests home for dinner or clients for a meal. Like if this was a pied à terre kind of situation for you, it's really nice. It's a fantastic place, certainly. And I think their style is interesting too, right? Like even the bed has got these weird hoops on it.
The swallowtails, swallows on the wood there.
Yeah, the swallows on the wood. It's just, you know, this was a property that somebody either hired a designer or had impeccable taste. And the little, even the acorn art, I think was an inclusion. That's, you know, one of the 26th slide on the deck. Okay, but let's talk about why it's a loser. So yes. it's a loser because they paid 1.8 in October of 2021. So this is not quite peak frenzy, but it's still pretty active, right? The listing had been priced at 1.85, and after 151 days, so that's your first red flag, right? 151 days in 2021 is an eternity. That was a year that we were seeing a lot of activity. They were still on market, and they dropped the price from 1.85 to 1.825. They knocked off a whole 25 grand, and then a month goes by, right? So you know there's likely no competition, and they negotiated a price of 1.805. So 1.805 over 1.825 is, you know, roughly 1%, 1.2% below list is what they got. So they got 20 grand off of list price. Not impressive from a negotiation perspective, given how long the listing had been on the market and the fact it was October. But that's what they paid for it. And they closed, and you'd think they live happily ever after, but something happened, and they decided to relist the property. Now, they relist it in September of this year, which – oh, I'm sorry. They relist it in June of this year. Yeah. June is late. So we will list year-round, but I always tell my clients that you're better off to list – in the first half of the year,
if you
can help it, March or April, statistically in a normal year, whatever that means anymore, better time to list. They chose to list in June, and they chose to list with a really high price. And they went to 2.15. And my rule of thumb is that you only get one chance to get your marketing right. And when you overprice a listing, you likely end up leaving a lot of money on the table because it takes a really long time to sell and you chase the market down and everyone wants to know what's wrong with it when there might be nothing other than the fact you overpriced it. You didn't really understand the market for this home. And ultimately, you end up at a much, much lower price. So 2.15, they launch in June. At the end of the month, they've dropped 50 grand. After 9 days, they dropped it 50 grand. And then 37 days in, now they've dropped it below two. And then they withdrew it, and they played the old, let's pretend this isn't a old listing. They withdrew it in August, and then they, even though the old listing had not expired, they relisted it with the same agent, so they didn't fire their agent, and they cut the price 75 grand. Wow. And then 42 days later, now we're into October, they dropped the price to 1.875, and at that price point, they finally got an offer that they were willing to accept. And it went under contract, and it closed at 1.86. Wow. And let me see if there are any disclosed concessions. No disclosed concessions. Cash deal.
You're on IRES?
I'm on IRES. I'm not going to mention the agent's name. Oh, sorry. There is a $4,000 disclosed concession. So knock another $4,000 off the price. 156. 1.856 is the final sale price. And when you add in the commissions involved and other transaction costs, not to mention the pain of people tromping through your property for all these months, possibly while you live there, likely while you live there, given what this property looked like, five price reductions. It's a pretty painful experience. And given the likely commissions in the deal, and we don't know what they were, we were not part of this transaction, they probably closed at 1.76. So 1.76 net, acquired for 1.8, you know, it cost them $45,000, which you could argue, hey, $45,000 to live downtown for an extended period of time in a luxury property, you know, excluding the HOA fees and all the other things, property taxes, that's not a bad deal, right? Real estate shouldn't always be, it always goes up. But most property between 2021 and 2023 increased materially in value. And that likely points to the fact that they overpaid for it.
Yeah, that perspective is one that I think gets lost a lot. Is, you know, you can look so closely at buy and sell, but then there's also kind of like, well, you know, at $45,000, right, to live there for a few years and be in a premium location and all that, it takes away the sting a little.
It does take away the, I mean, look, yeah. it's if you have the cash to throw down for $1.8 million property, $45,000 is immaterial, mm-hmm. and your happiness is worth a lot more than $45,000. Okay, there's no doubt about that. So I think it's a winner from that perspective. But from a, because it's a great property. All right, there's no argument. I think this is a great property. Mm-hmm. But I hate losing money, and I hate having my clients lose money. It feels like I've really screwed. And look, I don't think I've ever had a deal, by the way, where my buyers sold for less than they paid for it.
I mean, man, I'm going to knock on wood,
even including
here.
Commissions. Just, yeah, knock on wood, it never happens because I'm not in charge of what they buy. But yeah, I will tell them I don't think it's a good idea, and here's why. And I might say it twice for most clients. For one particular client, I've been instructed to say it three or four times because he really wants me to tell him how bad of an idea it is. But after I say it once or twice, I'm not going to keep saying it because it's offensive to our client. If they're in love with it, I'm not going to keep telling them what a horrible idea it is. But I promise you, I will tell you at least once and usually twice, but not three times because that's just obnoxious.
I've been a part of it. I can confirm Osman's telling the truth here.
If I really, really like it, and this is super rare, and I probably shouldn't say it on the podcast, but I'm going to say it.
Writing down the time code.
You may have to cut this out. But if I really, really, really like the property and you're not sure about it, I will offer you a very unique proposition on resale. That if you have to resell this property within 12 months, I will lower my commissions so that you don't lose money. To a certain point. I can't take away all costs, but I will lower our commission because I'm that confident you're not going to lose money on this property. And I'm that confident, frankly, you're not going to want to resell it in a year. Because I might want to buy it.
Yeah.
Because it's such a great property. And that is a very, it's maybe once a year those words escape my mouth. And they have to fit certain protocols, right? It has to make sense for me personally to own this thing because I might be the buyer. I have to be willing to buy it myself if I'm that confident.
Oh, hey, there's a topic we could loop in is that brokerage sign that Sophie shared in the team chat.
That's right. She did.
Yeah.
So now that you mentioned it, why don't you describe it? But don't mention the agent or brokerage name, please.
Oh, I'd have to look it up to get the specific details. No, it's a, you know, your standard listing sign with the agent, the brokerage, and everything. But I think it's like your house sells guaranteed or we will buy your house. It was one of those where it's like they're basically trying to make it say that you can't lose if you go with us. Like no matter what, the house is going to sell.
Right. What they say, I think the sign says, buy this house and Joe Schmo agent will buy yours.
Yeah, that was it.
Right. But what's missing from that is the asterisk that says Joe Schmo will buy your house at 75% of market value. Because that's what they're going to want to do. They're not going to want to pay you fair value for your house. They're hoping that you don't know fair value. And they'll be like, look, your house is worth X when it really is worth a lot more. They're going to make money on both deals. They're not mm-hmm. going to give you like fair. They're not going to move into your house.
The kindness
like,
of their heart. Yeah.
No, they are. That type of agent is hoping that you're not educated enough to know that. And you're, it's the kind of person that just, it's very predatory. It takes advantage mm-hmm. of people that are ignorant of the or way desperate. The world works.
Yeah.
Or desperate and want to believe. Right. And it's basically a couple that goes to look at a house and one partner says, we can't buy this house unless we sell ours. And it's like, honey, look, the sign says Joe Schmo will buy ours. Problem solved. Yeah. Problem solved with like 50 to 100 grand left on the table.
Big asterisks. Yeah.
Big asterisks. And in my opinion, unethical. But maybe I'm the problem.
That's a positive train of thought. Let's carry on from there.
Well, I don't just I can't like I have to look at myself in the mirror in the morning.
100%.
And taking advantage of people does not feel good. It's why I left an investment firm in New York. Mm-hmm. It felt dishonest and unethical, and I don't want to build a business or behave in ways that are unprofessional and unethical and immoral.
Yeah.
Taking advantage of people is immoral, and I don't know. It's just not how I was raised. It's not what my belief system and
Cognitive dissonance is not a fun experience, so we try to avoid that. You know?
Yeah. Let's move on to the next listing. Are you ready?
Yep.
So, this one is 3084 6th Street. It's a Newlands property.
Just sold November 21st.
And I'm pretty sure, Hamish, if you looked at it on our database of listings I've written about, which is hundreds of houses.
Let me pull it up.
I'm about 90% sure I wrote about this house because it's really unusual. It has stone block fascia. It was built in the 1940s. Most homes in Newlands don't look like this house. And it's a relatively small bungalow-style property with two bedrooms, two baths, roughly 2,100 square feet. And the story of this house is that the owner acquired it in 2022. This is January. And it had previously been listed. So the moral of this story is always look at the full listing history. And that way you'll get a much better sense of the desirability of this property. Even if it's perfect for you, you should at least know how the market has perceived this property in the past. And the way the market perceived this property in 2021 was it was listed in May at 2.285, so call it 2.3. They dropped it just 2 weeks later, which meant that the market wasn't very receptive, and they dropped it to 2.2, so they knocked 90 grand off the price. And then a month later, they just pulled it off entirely. So they withdrew it from the market in June, and then the listing automatically expired 2 months later. So it was still listed, but then it eventually expired. So hold on, that's MLS number 940054. Hold on 1 second. Let me open up the right little cart here. Make sure I got this right, because you got to get the data right if we're going to talk about that. So that was what happened in 2021. And then the listing agent, with an agent from a different brokerage, sold it for 2.4 in January of 2022. So sometime between August and January, this agent reached out to the buyer's agent likely reached out to the listing agent and said, hey, we noticed this listing you had back in 2021, 4 months ago. We're shopping over the holidays. Have you still got it? It's really cute. Can we go see it? And the listing agent, you know, clapped their hands together and said, sure. We were planning to bring it back for a much higher price because of how much desire was for this two-bedroom, two-bath bungalow with 2,000 square feet in Newlands. So we'll let you see it, but expect the price to be higher because of how the market's been and the fact that we've gotten a couple of phone calls of people interested. And so what's unique about the house, by the way, let's back up to that. Look at the photos if you're on it on Zillow. I don't know if actually the photos are fully on Zillow. But
they're on realtor.com.
Okay, go to realtor.com. What you'll see is really beautifully updated inside. I personally think they went a little too far into modern for a historic house. It's kind of a disconnect, and maybe that's how the market
Sterile.
You think it's sterile? Yeah. I mean, it's overexposed. Every photo is so overexposed. Like, you can see completely under the couch. It's HDR taken to an extreme. But it's done, right? The house is turnkey. It's really cute. It doesn't have a garage, which is another red flag. And it only has two bedrooms and two baths, which is kind of problematic for a lot of people that want to have a guest over, for example. And so there's two things about this listing that I would have been worried about for my buyers had they been interested. One, it was built built pre-war. Two, it only has two bedrooms and two baths. Three, it doesn't have a garage. So pre-war means that you're going to find it very challenging to do updates that expand the footprint going forward. It's Newlands, which is ground zero for resistance to bigger homes. So be careful. At a minimum, get a builder to go with you when you evaluate this house or while you're under contract, perhaps. But anyway, they bought it. So they bought it. It was entered in with 1 day on market, sold for 2.43 with a conventional fixed rate mortgage, no concessions. And, you know, I do think it's a pretty house. It's very physically attractive. All right. So we don't know what although with those three problems. So we don't know what happened with the sellers. We don't know who they are. Don't have anything personal with them. This is just a discussion of what happened to the deal.
Right.
So fast forward from January of 2022. Sorry, you were going to add something, Hamish?
No, I just said right. I was agreeing.
Okay. It might be useful to do screenshots, Hamish, of the listing history. So I'll give those to you so you can put them into the video.
Okay.
Because I think that way people can see what we're talking about. But March 17th, 2023, and make a time note there so that we can come back to it. So March 17th of this year, lo and behold, they decided to relist it. And who did they choose for their agent? They chose the same agent that represented them when they acquired the place. So now the buyer's agent's the listing agent. And he says, hey, it's worth 2.485. So we know the market is in general cooled, but he's listing at $55,000 more than the original purchase price. And it goes on market at the right time of year in March. I'm not sure why it was listed with, you know, a kitchen photo as the first photo. It also looks almost like some of these old photos were repurposed, but no, I think they're different photos. You know, it's usually a question mark when you don't have the first photo be the house.
It's never as enticing.
Well, know? It sends a market signal like, is it an ugly house? Why don't we have a curb shot? It's just strange.
What's
so
the catch?
It isn't. Sometimes it's the right answer, by the way, because if the inside is gorgeous and the outside is horrible,
standard,
then then maybe you need to focus on the designer interior. But it definitely creates a little minimum, I don't know, what's the feeling of doubt when we start looking at these homes and decide what, well,
maybe
just note it. That's strange. Why did they go with an interior shot first? So they listed it at 2.485. That's March. And after... I'm sorry, they listed it at 2.585. My bad. Oof. So they listed it not 50. I don't know where my brain was. I said 55,000. No, they listed it at 155,000 over list. And that, you know, their thinking often is, a seller's thinking is, oh man, I don't want to lose money. So let's just, you know, list it at a price where the roughly 6% of commissions are covered.
That's exactly what I just noticed. I just did that math and I was like, oh, how about that?
Is it almost exactly
155,100?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's how people and how it's just human nature that nobody likes to lose money on an asset and they know their transaction costs. So they're like, let's just get out of it for what we paid for it. List it at 2.585. And that's what the listing agent did. But after 172 days, so it sat there for 6 months, almost 6 months, just shy 1 week of 6 months, roughly 10 days, roughly 2 weeks shy of 6 months. 5.5 months, they cut the price finally to 2.485. And it eventually went under pending status a month later than that. So on October 13th of this year, it went under contract and was switched to pending. And then 5 weeks later, it closed. And it closed for 2.26. Sorry, my printer just turned off for some reason. 2.26.
Yep.
So... here's the math. They bought it at 2.43. They sold it at 2.26. Even without commissions involved, we're talking about $170,000 loss. With commissions, obviously, much, much more. So, take-home lesson. Maybe it was the best experience and the best money they ever spent, and they loved every minute of it, and maybe there was life circumstances that caused them to move. But I sure hope that somebody told them that it's small and it only has two bedrooms and no garage. Are you sure you really want it? Instead of just, you know, pimping up how amazingly beautiful and updated it is. Because you can fix a lot of things, but with a home built in the 1940s, it's going to be expensive and difficult to add to the back, particularly in historic districts. Not always, but in historic districts always, but not always just because it was pre-war. Just expect it to be more challenging and more expensive because of the nature of this house.
Just the property type.
Mm-hmm. Well, you weren't there, Hamish, but we just met with a great builder in town that, you know, I'm not sure I'll mention their name, but they've got a reputation of being expensive. And I've had two of our clients tell us how great they are. And after that, I said, okay, we're happy. They reached out to us and asked to meet with us to give us their sales pitch. And I'm like, sure, let's hear it. Only because we had gotten two referrals from my personal past clients to talk about how good they are. Hmm. And they offered to attend any inspection. They would send somebody to truth test this stuff. But an experienced agent really should know some things like setbacks, zoning restrictions, the floor area ratio, bulk plane restrictions, solar access, some of the challenges with modifying a historic home. I mean, all of that's important. South facing versus east facing, east and west facing. All of these things have a big impact on build out potential.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it.
This is a tricky property type, you know, being pre-war, not having a garage, only two bed, only two bath, especially in its location. It's an odd one.
You're moving from San Francisco or New York or Boston. You haven't had a car in the garage for years. Doesn't matter to you. You don't have kids. You're maybe just buying this to be close to your grandkids. And you just want to visit and be in a really adorable Dwell Magazine-worthy house. Although I don't think this is, but the interior might be.
But, yeah.
And so, no-brainer. But that's a tiny segment of the market. And for most people, they only see the segment they're in. Well, if it appealed to me, there must be other people like me. There are. They're just willing to pay $200,000 less than you were 2 years ago.
As you can see.
Yeah, more than that. I mean, this person lost a lot of money. And maybe it's irrelevant to their assets, you know, that they have, that loss was well worth it. Or maybe something forced them to sell and they didn't want to. We don't know, and I certainly wish them well, and I'm sorry they lost money. And I hope the buyer that just acquired it last week, we're told some of these things, that in the future, if you have to sell this on short notice, you might lose some money.
Yeah, saw that. Hopefully they saw the listing history and kind of went in eyes wide open, right?
Hopefully, but hope is not a strategy.
That'll be
it's
on
just,
a t-shirt.
It's just, I don't know. I find it sort of, I personally feel bad for people that lose money on investments. And this is one of the reasons I never wanted to raise capital for a startup, because there's a mindset in my head about I really don't like losing money for people that trust me. So time is also the pain. It's not just about money with a real estate asset, because you have people walking into your house on short notice. You have to keep it looking like a museum. People sometimes are disrespectful. They don't flush toilets. Like, it's really – people are sometimes kind of rude with listings. If you're a listing agent, that's like our team, you're attending showings too. So there's a lot of cost involved with keeping a listing going. And they kept it going for months and months till finally they capitulated.
Did you look at the past listing? Is this remodel new to it? Or has it been remodeled for a while?
No, I think it looked the same in the last listing. I could double check, because that would be even more of a loss.
Oh my gosh,
I'm pretty sure the 2022 sale at 2.43 was basically the same house. Okay. Yeah, no, it was totally buttoned up. Yeah. Damish.
Jeez.
Buttoned up and beautifully staged. And I mean, the photos are blown out, so the photographer in me is offended, but the listing looked fine.
Okay.
So take home is when your real estate agent waves their hands around and says people don't lose money at Boulder, real estate only goes up. It doesn't. And here are two examples. And I also wanted to share those with you because this is the fourth quarter. And when I tell my clients this is the time of year to go aggressive, if you're shopping, these are two examples of recent sales that illustrate the point, where people are getting a pretty hefty discount from what people, the seller paid for the house.
One final thing on this. The Realtor.com listing says it's got a two-car garage, which doesn't track with me at all, but hey, do you think it's a mislisted?
It's listed as two-car off-street.
Oh.
So Realtor.com is just listing it as two-car.
Mm-hmm.
No, it has no two-car off-street. It might as well have 50-car off-street. Yeah. It's all off-street.
I saw this one listing, and it said, you know, some sort of house surrounded by 60 acres. And I was like, well, my house is surrounded by all of the acres you could possibly have. I mean, of course there's land around the house. Why would, what, who cares, you know, but yeah, sure.
Well,
not,
I mean, when a list, usually it's like farmland or conservation easement, protected land or open space. And we've had podcasts about how important it is to check all that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the listing agent basically said, look, the street frontage is wide enough for two cars. Legally in the city of Boulder, you don't own your street, so anybody could park in front of your house. In practice, people don't do that very often because it upsets people in the neighborhood to park, you know, your adventure van in front of your neighbor's house. They get, and don't ask me how I know, they get upset. Even if it's for like a couple of hours, they get upset.
There is a concrete pad in the backyard, so I wonder if that's that they're referring to.
No, it's listed as off-street, Hamish. That's like a patio.
Weird. Yep. Anyhow.
All right. That's sales of the week. How are we doing on time?
Great.
We're doing all right. We're doing all right. Okay, so let's talk about title companies.
Yeah.
And we just had a really nice happy hour with our favorite people at Land Title. And I personally have been using Land Title for many years, and in particular, one closing agent. For many, many years. We're talking hundreds of transactions. And the reason that I continue to recommend to my sellers we use this particular closer and this particular title company is Land Title is the 800-pound gorilla of title companies in the state of Colorado. They are everywhere, so they're not named fly-by-night title. And that gives the buyer and seller some sense of confidence that their escrows are going to be handled properly. And if they make a mistake, they've got the resources to fix it. But really, how did we get to using them in the beginning? It's the same reason we continue to use them. It's the responsiveness and professionalism and also friendliness of this team. Like, insane. They are on it. And when I work with any other title company, and there's others that might enter our orbit because I'm connecting with other title people because of other things I do. In the past, when I've used somebody else, it's just sad how slow the response times are, how dysfunctional they are, how we get the closing statement 15 minutes before the scheduled closing, how there are mistakes frequently in the title commitment. I mean, it's sort of embarrassing. And Land Title is not perfect. They've made mistakes too. And when I made a lot of noise about a mistake they made, they actually covered it. And I had to run it up the flagpole because it was really unusual, right up to the leadership at Land Title. And they're like, you're right. We screwed this up. We'll own it. And in that particular issue involved a security deposit for somebody who was doing a post-closing occupancy.
Mm.
And I did not personally attend closing. And it turned out that the people screwed up the house. I mean, you don't expect the seller to mess up their own house, right? They got their money, and then they decided to go smoke a bunch of pot and have a bunch of parties, and then they've moved to Florida. That's what happened. And they left all their junk in the house, even though it was contractual that they were supposed to remove it all. And my buyers show up with a moving truck, and the house is full of somebody else's stuff.
Holy
and
it's cow. Gross.
And I was like, don't worry, buyers. We've got a security deposit. And buyers are like, we don't have it. And I'm like, okay, Land Title should. So normally they give the buyer the security deposit. We don't usually get in the middle of that, or maybe Land Title is holding an escrow, and it turned out they weren't. They forgot to collect it. Yeah.
Jeez.
Because it wasn't on the settlement statement. And so that's from that point forward, whenever we've done security deposits, either buyers are getting a check in hand, certified funds, or it better be on the settlement statement. Otherwise, whose responsibility is it? And I ended up writing a check, but then Land Title came in and made up that amount, and my buyers ripped up the check. But they were right. And at the end of the day, I just wrote the check because I didn't know how to solve this problem, and I didn't want to lose these friends and clients, and somebody needed to pay for it. So I did, and eventually Land Title stepped up too, but I had to make a couple of agitated phone calls.
Be the squeaky wheel for a little bit, right?
I had to squeak pretty loudly, yeah. And I don't think any other title company would have written a check. So we're pretty loyal to Land Title, but if our clients want to use a different title company, mm-hmm. we're happy to consider it. We just warn them to make sure they're at least one of the biggies, not some title company that does this for a discount that's substantially lower than all the other big players, because you get what you pay for in life. And these people are handling your escrows. These people are doing the recordings. These people are making sure there's no liens on the house. All of that's important. There's some things to skimp on. And unfortunately, you can't get out of title insurance, by the way, even if you're doing squeaky clean deal, everything's perfect. There's still cost incurred. And title company profitability is like 90% on the title commitment or something insane. That's why they have the nicest offices in town. But there's really no way to avoid using and paying for title insurance. So you might as well just use the best one, because the difference in cost between top players is like the difference in cost between top agents. They're all charging roughly the same fees. You should not be making your decision on who to use as an agent for a discounted commission or who to use as a title company because they're $50 or $100 cheaper than the other title company. These are bad metrics for decision making.
No, I've seen quite a few contracts out of Denver at this point, and Denver's just where I see them the most, but there's also a ton of title companies that are under the same umbrella of that brokerage, right? I think like Remax has their own title company now, and all these brokerages have their own, and you just see all these affiliated business disclosures fly back and forth.
And there's no advantage to the agent for using the affiliated business typically. Mm. And if it is, it's a tiny advantage. Like maybe there's some commission
kickback.
We don't have a captive title company. It can't be a kickback. It's a regulated industry. Right. There's no paper bags of cash. But even some of the top agents in town, there's one agent in particular, won't name her, but she does a ton of business. And she uses not Guardian Title, the captive title company for Coldwell. Hmm. She uses Land Title. And I wonder why.
Something, yeah.
Like she literally is in the same office as this other title company. And she said, that's enough. We've had enough screw-ups. We're done. We're using Land. So, you know, choose your title company carefully. And all of this, in my opinion, falls under bedside manner. And it's responsiveness. It's patience when you have a dumb question. It's not having somebody on the other end of the phone who's arrogant and makes you feel
just
dumb
by you calling.
Or who literally will, if you call and leave a voicemail, will call you back usually the same day. That's mm-hmm. really important. And we see these differences in professionalism across the industry. Inspectors, real estate agents for sure. And of course the affiliated people like title and property insurance, homeowners insurance, lenders, all of these people.
Yeah, lenders is a huge one.
After 20 years in the business, you realize that all that glitters isn't gold, and we can't use that as a title, but it's a warning to do your due diligence on who you're choosing, and the more pompous they are about how great they are, the less likely they are to have patience and the less likely they are to care about your particular deal. They're just really good at convincing you how successful they are and how they run the town and how they they're just the top of everything. And the mistake that people make is they don't ask first. That doesn't signal to them that's a warning. And second, they don't do additional due diligence on the partners that actually know. And I've said this before, if you want to know who the top agent is in town,
yeah,
talk to title people. If you want to know who is really good at their job, talk to title people. They actually fix these mistakes and deal with incompetence all the time.
And see endless contracts, right? I mean, all
the
deals.
And see endless contracts. Yeah. They're the ones that are dealing with this, and their pay is not tied to it. And there's so much demand for title people. They're probably not worried about throwing under the bus the bad. They don't want the bad agents back anyway. Yeah. So they
it's
will tell
in their interest
you who's
to
bad.
Have good agents. Make their job easier. Yeah.
So if you have take a title clerk out to lunch, ask around. Don't just take the agent's word for it that they're good at what they do.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and there's lots more on that topic.
Do
by the
we
way, in podcast four.
Shout them out by name. I mean, criticize category, praise by name.
Oh, our favorite people at Land Title. Sure. I mean, we write it in every listing. It's Jackie Beck.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely.
And her team.
Paul and Melissa. Those three are rock stars. And honestly, if they switched to a different top title company, you know, another one of the biggies, we would just go wherever they went. Yeah. It's, I know it's them is 90% of it. And then 10% is also the size and reputation of Land Title itself. They're just killer at what they do. So Jackie's, I'm happy to mention them by name.
Jackie's length in the business is insane, because we'll, every now and then, you know, when we go out to dinner or something, she'll bring up the story of a very specific case that happened, or we'll have a question for her, and she'll only know the answer because, you know, 20 years back she had that exact thing happen, and she's the only one of the entire office that had to deal with it. And it's just a bunch of fun.
She also was an assistant to a top agent who's still in business, so we won't mention his name. She also was a licensed agent herself for a period of time. Mm-hmm. So she knows this business, and she's fantastic to work with, and she's also really funny,
yeah,
which is helps. Pleasant. And, yeah. And why we like taking her or going with them, why we like having happy hours with that crew, because it's just really nice to spend time with people you work with all the time.
Yeah. I reached out to Paul, you know, are you open on this date? And he said, we are, but just for you. And it's just the you know, just the little things. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Our people.
So if you want more about agent selection tips and questions you can ask, check out podcast 4. Mm. That was, God, can you believe that was so many podcasts ago? But check it out. There's more info there. And then let's wrap up this this dog and pony show, Hamish. We've got something we've teased.
Yeah. It's huge. Big events. Boulder and Boulder County really being most of, well, I'm going to start again. Boulder County being the great area that it is, throws a plethora of holiday events. And Osmond, you're attending a few this week. I think I'm going to try and make a few as well.
Okay.
Yeah. I've never
been. Well, if you get this podcast out by Friday morning, this might still be relevant.
No. This will be out next week.
Okay. All right. We'll discuss this further. But this coming Saturday is the Parade of Lights, and it's Boulder's annual holiday parade. A group of people I've been friends with and participated with and played with for decades, the Boulder Cruisers, will be in the Parade of Lights. I used to put Marley, my golden retriever, in a little tow carriage and tow him, you know, decorate the carriage and the bike and then tow him around the block.
You a put couple, a little Santa hat block, on.
Yeah, well, he wouldn't keep wearing it, but... so that's the Parade of Lights. It's really fun. And then on Saturday night also, and Sunday, so if you do the Parade of Lights on Saturday, Sunday would be the historic Boulder Homes for the Holidays, which is in the Mapleton. Whittier and Mapleton Historic Districts. You can get a discount if you join Historic Boulder, or you could just buy tickets at the door, or you can buy them in advance. This is a really nice way to see gorgeous historic homes. Something that's very dear and near and dear to my heart. I love historic properties. And these people are usually people that have taken such great care of these homes. Historic homes in Boulder are part of our heritage. They often were built and occupied by civic leaders, people in city council, as well as business leadership in our community, people that really made a difference over many decades in our community. And they often lived in places like Mapleton Hill. And so these homes are stunning and are really nostalgic and evocative of a different era. And usually the homes that are on the tour have been gorgeously updated. So if you are in town this weekend, and if you're hearing this after the fact, I'm sorry we didn't get this podcast out fast enough. But if you're in town, check out these two events. And then we've got one more happening in December. We won't reveal the dates, but... we're going to do our annual retreat this year in December rather than January, and we were headed to NOLA. Last year we went to Mexico, Puerto Vallarta, and this year we are
staying domestic. NOLA. Yeah,
we're staying domestic, just a little saner than going to Mexico, a little closer, less flight time, the goal. Our retreats are so much fun, Hamish.
Yeah, no, I can't wait.
I mean, we actually get a lot of work done, too. I've been to so many conferences and business meetings and plane that, you know, took a plane to go to, and none of them have been as the combination, the Venn diagram of productive and fun as our company retreats have been. And so this is our third annual company retreat, And it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun. It's also going to be hopefully extremely productive as we talk about trends, as we talk about our competitive strengths and how to leverage those, how to communicate those to our clients, how to serve our people better, and how to really kick off 2024 with a bang.
Yeah. No, I'm really excited for it. And I've never been to NOLA or New Orleans. New Orleans? I got to learn how to say it like a local. But I'm really excited for the food there, too, on a personal note.
Great food.
Yeah.
Fantastic food. So that's it for this House Einstein podcast. Podcast number 27. And we deeply appreciate you listening to the podcast. We love your comments and the number of clients that have reached out. New client relationships that have begun from the podcast. I deeply appreciate those as well. And if you're looking for us, you'll find us at houseeinstein.com. You'll see my contact information there. Hamish is on there as well, and as well as the rest of the House Einstein team. And thanks again for being a listener.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, final note, really quick. I will be posting some upcoming events for the month of December, some holiday events. So if you missed this one and it comes out, you know, the week after this weekend, there will still be more events. Just follow us, House Einstein, on Instagram. Alrighty.
Thanks so much.